Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
For twice as much as whatever the fastest route is now, I think people would easily have to
Wouldn't that be $700 or $800?
But the Concorde, the Concorde offered that and ultimately was
but it was still
successful.
Hours.
I mean, yes, but it was half the time.
It was half.
If you were like
half the time,
hey, would you like to go see the Yankees? Game time's in an hour and a half. Oh yeah, sure. Let's get up in 30
minutes. I wouldn't do that.
Oh my God,
I don't even go to Mazza Gallery for screenings.
Right,
I wouldn't. It's literally
it's across the street.
The street.
You could walk there.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
All righty then, we're live at Chatter. We're open for breakfast starting at 7 in the morning every weekday that we do this show. We have a nice crowd here already. Thank you very much for showing up. Some of whom were here yesterday or last night. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest in the capital of the United States of America, the District of Columbia. David Aldridge is here. Liz Clark, late night. Monday Night Football in Philadelphia. I always liked Monday Night Football in Philadelphia because I drove home afterwards.
Exactly.
Michael Kornheiser, fresh from golf story that he can talk about later. Nigel is here running the board. We will have Jason Lockenfora. We will have Barry Zwerluga on the show. Clear up some things. Sam in Cincinnati writes, thank you for helping me with the woman to whom I'm related by marriage. Have a happy anniversary, our second. Rather than get her a gift, I thought I'd bring you something. I hope I'm not too late for the tie drive. Brought us beautiful ties. Yeah. We have a letter from Colin Matthews, a Moray grad, a little bit older than Michael, probably the year before Elizabeth. Moray 2000, then Colgate, then Yale School of Management, who writes, do you like Moray Award plaques? How do you like these plaques? And he just sent us, just as David said, random plaques.
Random things he won
when he was an athlete in sixth grade. He was a seventh grade athlete of the year, Colin Matthews.
Awesome.
We appreciate that. And he writes and gives me, something just crashed. He says, I have an open invitation for a round at the Rockaway Hunt Club, the oldest 1878 country club, not golf course in the U.S. If you're in your childhood neck of Long Island, I know that course well. David and I aren't getting on that one. We're not getting on that one. But it's beautiful. Rockaway Hunt Club is beautiful. Okay. I was a bartender last. Oh, happy birthday to Barry Hoffheimer. His birthday today.
Happy birthday.
Barry. Bill Hoffheimer's dad. Okay. I was here last night. I was a celebrity bartender, Gary Williams and I. I had a lot of fun. I got here at 6:30. I left at 8. I was immediately told by the socialite that I cost us money because I brought in a huge tray of pretzels. The Philly Pretzel Company, in anticipation of the Philadelphia Redskins game, sent PTI a whole bunch of pretzels, which we gave out to the crew. And I brought a giant tray of pretzels here, which I was putting on the bar for people to have. And Alan said, well, then nobody's going to order food. You've cost us a lot of money.
But they'll buy more beer.
Yeah, exactly.
So I felt terrible.
It's the whole point
but
of pretzels.
Steve, who was here yesterday, put a lot of the pretzels in little baskets with sauces, and we put them out on the bar, and I was happy for that. And then I proceeded to take orders from people. And I, of course, I could not even pour the beer. I didn't know the bartenders, Jonathan in particular, who was with me the whole time. Mm-hmm. That's an art. That's an art and a skill.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay?
Yeah.
I didn't know that until last night.
Mm-hmm. Like how to tilt the glass.
The ability to tilt the glass. And like Jonathan would say to me, there's an imaginary line. And when you reach that line, then you have to turn the glass. And I said, if it's imaginary, how do I know where the line is? You know, so
I
constantly cost us money.
You learn how to pour a beer in college.
Time and time, I cost us money with bad pours.
You poured a glass of white wine that was overflowing.
I know, I did that. I said, kill it. Kill the bottle. Kill it. That was for Kathy, I think, because Renee and Kathy and Jay came from work. Wilbon came, which was so nice.
That's awesome.
Wilbon showed up and, of course, ordered a Kir Royale and said, no, I don't want it. I want ginger ale. And I gave him ginger ale with a cherry in it because I thought he should have that.
Absolutely.
And everybody was delighted to see him and delighted to see Gary, and Ernie Bauer was here. Gene Wang was here. Gene wrote about it.
He wrote about it, which is very nice.
Yeah. Jimmy Crilly, Gail Delaney. So Jimmy Crilly and his daughter Margaret were here, and Margaret ordered something, and I did the Bill Murray thing. I asked Jonathan for a bottle of tequila. I simply poured a couple of shots of tequila and handed it to her, and Jimmy was appalled by how much tequila I put in the glass. And I mean, I will say that I had fun. I think we had a pretty good crowd. I mean, you figured to have a good crowd when you're going
to... Monday night.
Gary and I are going to do this, and it's a Redskin game on Monday night.
Sure.
So we had a good crowd. I hope we made some money. people asked, do you enjoy it? I enjoyed it tremendously. Good. I thought it was great fun.
Except for the money it cost to come.
Yeah, nobody tipped me. even though these were country club pours, as we like to say. When I got my hands on the wine, I did not stop pouring. But, I mean, I hope everybody had a really good time, because I had a good time. And then the bad news. Then I went home and settled in to watch the game. The Eagles could not get out of their own way in the first drive. They were backed up to their own end zone with penalty after penalty after penalty after penalty. They went down 3-0. And then 3-3, then 10-3. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and Liz, you were there, mm-hmm. I thought they were dominant. Dominant in the first quarter. Yeah. They were sacking Wentz. They were finding open people easily. Cousins looked great.
Yes.
And then
Wentz. The rest of the story.
Yeah, and then Wentz did that thing that he does, and not all young quarterbacks do this. He looks downfield. Mm-hmm. He's like on the first interception, better than a punt. He threw it 60 in the air. What does he care? And then he hit a guy downfield in stride, being covered not by a DB, I believe, but by a linebacker. Am I right on that?
I think a safety.
No, the first touchdown? No,
yeah.
It was a DB.
Okay, well, then he was.
The Ertz DB was the guy that was killing the linebacker.
Yeah, the so. DB could not and, keep up. And so swear. Now it's 10-10. And even at 10-10, yeah. You say to yourself, well, the Redskins have been dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do this thing that they've been doing for 20 years.
What's that?
Yielding a touchdown in the last minute of the first half to completely flip the game because the Eagles are going to get the ball to start the second half. They yield a touchdown. Ertz gets that touchdown. Wentz goes down, goes 80 yards in less than 90 seconds or something like that. Mm-hmm. And at some point between then and the fourth quarter, the Eagles score touchdowns on 3 consecutive possessions and 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
And 4 out of 5. Now, did I think the Eagles were going to win? Yes, but the Redskins had given me great hope in the first quarter. And so, David, yours and Liz.
Well, I mean, look, I don't think they're not a very good team. Look,
I thought, well, this is the end of thinking they're a good team.
Yeah, I never thought they were a very good team. They beat some mediocre teams. You know, that's okay. I'm not angry. They are what they are. They had chances in the first half, especially, to take control of the game. They're up
to
10,
score.
They're up 10-3. They are a 3rd-and-1 at their 40. And of course Jay decided, of course you're going to pass on 3rd-and-1, because that's what Jay Gruden does.
Even though the running backs have not been stopped.
It's okay. You want to throw on 3rd-and-1. That's what he's going to do. It would be nice to run a pattern that's more than a half yard on 3rd-and-1 if you're going to do that. And it would be nice if the quarterback didn't throw the ball to a guy that's run a half yard pattern. Maybe find somebody else that's open and has a first down.
Because people were running open.
You know, but that was... You know.
No, I think it was hard to run. Go ahead.
Yeah. Kelly ran early and ran well.
I don't mind that they threw the ball. That ship has sailed. He's going to throw the ball 60% of the time because that's what he does. That's okay. But it's 3rd-and-1. This is not a hard ask. You got 5 receivers or 4 receivers. Yeah. Somebody run 3 yards and turn around, and I'll throw you the ball. We'll get a first down. So, you know, they lose that. They sack Wentz, and on the next play, he throws a 70-yard touchdown pass. Okay. They continue to give up touchdowns in the last 2 minutes of the first half because, unlike, say, 31 other teams, they have no concept of how to stop a team that's going no huddle. They just can't do it. They can't get their personnel group on the field that stops the no huddle.
That's coaching. I mean, I don't want to take the Steve Sands position, which was very articulate in his text, but that's coaching.
Well, it's personnel and coaching, but they cannot get off. They can't stop anybody that goes no huddle. I don't know why this is endemic specifically to this football team, but they can't do it. And so then they're down 24-10. They have a drive. They have a good drive. They score a touchdown. It's 24-17. They're in the game. They have a chance. It's 3rd-and-8. Wentz goes back. 17 Redskins surround him. Somehow he comes out.
He literally disappears from view. Yeah. And the next thing you know, he's 20 yards down.
And that's the game.
He's popping up like a rabbit.
Right.
I'm done talking.
So you're watching. You're covering. You're taking notes.
No, I mean, my ebb and flow is just like yours. I thought, oh, my God, they're in this. I mean, the penalties were so annoying. It was really hard to feel there was any flow. But that said, there was no question who was the dominant team. I thought it was the best I'd seen the Redskins defense play. And, you know, they were without their 2 best players, Jonathan Allen and Josh Norman. So, I mean, I thought the Redskins would lose this, and I certainly thought Carson Wentz was a very special quarterback, but I didn't expect them to lose it in this manner, and I didn't expect Wentz to be as inventive and just impossible to deal with once he got rolling. So
he's hit and falling down and throws touchdowns.
Yeah,
passes.
I mean, I kind of want to see the game again and just focus on him the entire game to appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because covering it, you know, covering the Redskins and seeing it through that prism, it just seemed like a cascade of bad, bad, bad. If not, you know, bad plays, bad news. You know, injuries going forward are going to be a huge story about does this team have
Morgan
three more
Moses
wins left
like,
or five more wins left?
And they also got a dose of bad luck, which is Ezekiel Elliott is not going to be suspended
for
Sunday's game.
Right.
And Ezekiel Elliott the other day was all pro first team.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah, and they have 6 days to get ready for that. And, you know, 3/5 of their offensive line has grave, grave questions. The two
Sheriff
pro bowlers.
And Williams and Moses.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. That's.
Well, the center went out, too.
Yes, and he went out briefly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right, so when you look at the team, now I'm going to take issue with something that David said. I mean, I think Oakland is a pretty good team, and they dominated Oakland. They were in it with Kansas City. As it turns out, the Los Angeles Rams are a lot better than we ever thought they were going to be. So, I mean, and the Redskins have played a relatively hard schedule in that regard. And they get Philly twice, and Philly is got the best record in the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the best record. Do they have the best record in the NFL?
They do. I think they're the only one-loss team, and now they're 6-1.
So they've had a tougher time in terms of opponents.
Yes.
But the big but is this. You see this time and time and time again, the yielding of touchdowns in winnable games.
Yes.
Right, David? That would be fair to say. Yes. The yielding of touchdowns in winnable games.
Yes.
Yeah, which is...
And Wentz outplayed Cousins.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, he would have outplayed not, like 30 quarterbacks in the league. I mean,
that's not a surprise.
Really special.
The statistics really are interesting in this regard. Cousins had 30 completions. That's a lot. 3 touchdowns for 303 yards.
Yeah.
Wentz had 17 for 268 and 4.
Yeah, those are
it's
wow.
So much situational. The Redskins make great plays when it, you know, it doesn't matter quite as much, and they struggle when it really really does matter. As you say, the end of the half, the end of the start of the second half, and then the end of the game. So
the deferring is something that people just do automatically and I think is stupid. But in this case, it was perfect.
It's a New England thing.
They were in position.
Yeah.
They have just scored
twice,
and they score more.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I hear that you were trying to build a case based on their opponents and the way their schedule was going. Maybe they're better than people are saying.
But
you know, last night kind of shot it for me. In that I keep seeing them lose the same way. And again, I understand they're 3-3, so I have seen 3 victories. But the losses seem to repeat the pattern. The guy I would consider their most dynamic, explosive defensive playmaker actively playing, DJ Swearinger, gave up the 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just out of where, really?
Mm.
And he was very contrite. He felt terrible. But you don't expect that to happen. And then again, the running game is nothing special. It's never going to be special. It's going to work if the offensive line kicks rear. And that's just not possible with Trent Williams. I mean, this guy is a beast. He will run through a brick wall for his quarterback, for his team, if needed. And, you know, last night he just said, I don't know that I'm sort of doing more harm than good here. I can't play to my ability.
Oh, is that right? So he may not play.
He may not. I mean, he's going to see a doctor. What they had sort of passed off as a pain tolerance issue, a mild knee strain that he was going to be fine with, he explained to me, was going to need surgery that requires 5 or 6 months recovery. So it's a serious situation.
Serious.
And he told me Saturday, I'm going to try to put it off as long as I can. My goal is to play the end of the season. So after going through this game, when he's acutely aware that he's not himself, he's still better than a lot of people, he's not himself, to openly say, I don't know that I'm helping anybody here. So he's going to see a specialist, and I hope the specialist will speak very bluntly to him about what is in his best interest as a human being and an athlete. You have the other Pro Bowl lineman having an MRI today to see if there's an MCL issue.
This is not optimism going forward on your through your eyes.
Well, on this team, this offense, this quarterback, this running game, the offensive line is everything. I mean, they are so unheralded, in my view. They have made what happens happen. You know, again, when you take away DeSean Jackson, that's one guy who is going to make things happen no matter what. He's going to walk onto the field and change your defense. They don't have that. So they are doing things kind of the grunt way. And when it succeeded, I think a lot of the success goes back to the line. And they don't have any depth. Not because they didn't plan it, but one backup guard is out with a concussion. The best backup tackle just had surgery a couple weeks ago. So it's
so I'll ask
dire.
The question that is in the back of everyone's mind. Mm. It's not in the forefront, but it's in the back of everyone's mind. Do results like this make it, in fact, more probable that Kirk Cousins will say goodbye to this team? Or do we just accept that he will do that?
I'm not connecting the dots on that at all.
Okay.
No, not yet. That's a totally different.
I think his decision will be based on, well, it doesn't matter what I think.
It does.
Well, it sort of does.
You think it does.
It's your show.
I don't think it's in his mind. I really believe that he is excellent at compartmentalizing. This is not a question he's dealing with. It takes all of his effort to be the best player he can. I mean, this is an overachieving guy from eighth grade. So he is a worker. He's not going to deal with this till later.
I think
it's
going to
be in you know, February, March that he and all of us can really look around the league and say which of these eight opportunities gives him the best chance of winning.
Yeah.
And we know the league. I mean, who knows if Roethlisberger is going to come back? We can't even list the teams because Pittsburgh. Who knows in the 10 games that remain or 9, whatever. Who's going to come and play, and who is a team that I don't want to go
That's
there.
That's where I would go.
It's way too
Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, absolutely. Right. I get to throw to Antonio Brown.
Nobody
yes.
mentions
me up
Pittsburgh,
for that.
But I think it's absolutely. Worth throwing in the hopper.
Yes.
All right. That's depressing. Let's take a break. When we return, Jason Lockenfour of CBS Sports will tell us about things outside of the Redskins and the Eagles. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a SeatGeek read, which is smart to do after talking about a football game because buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps of your phone. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices. It's fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. And SeatGeek, or your favorite bartender. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices, find amazing deals. Can you imagine that if we were selling tickets to watch us, Gary and I, bartend? And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. We have a bid of 25 cents from David Aldridge to watch us bartend.
Bucks. $25.
Oh, wasn't 2 bits?
plus, every purchase fully guaranteed. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. And so I stress that you should make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, as we say all the time, listeners to this show and participants in this show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, SeatGeek, and enter the promo code Tony today. That is promo code Tony for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
If I were a dog, wouldn't be too weird if I kissed everyone I saw.
This is Zach Wheaton from Ghoul School writing us in another song from our EP available for purchase at ghoulschool916.bandcamp.com.
You can also find them on iTunes.
This is called Dog Song. Yes. Was the first line, if I were a dog, would it be too weird?
If I kissed everyone.
Yeah.
I saw.
Zach on drums, Andy on guitar and vocals.
I love the spirit of this.
Candace on bass, and Natalia. Natalia is doing
great
lead
singing.
Vocals.
Yes.
They play in Jason LaCanfora of CBS Sports. And since we have just dissected the Monday night game here, we will spare Jason from having to do it. And we'll start with what seems to me one of the more overriding questions in the NFL this year, other than the fact that it's a cap-sized league when so many teams that you thought would be good or not. Let's start with the most obvious example of this. What on earth is with Atlanta, Jason? What's with Atlanta?
I don't want to oversimplify things, but Kyle Shanahan is really, really good at what he does best, which is coming up with an individualized game plan every week to reinvent his team, to cash in on wherever he thinks the best matchups are, to scheme particular players any given week, whether it's one of his two running backs or Taylor Gabriel or a tight end nobody's heard of or just playing Julio Jones, feature that guy, exploit certain tendencies and weaknesses until the other team adjusts, and when they adjust, then you go elsewhere and exploit them there. He is a master craftsman when it comes to that. And after a year of sort of tumult and give and take with Matt Ryan and him trying to ask Matt to run boots and do Gary Kubiak-like things, and Ryan saying, no, this is who I am. In year two, they found sort of a level of simpatico where they basically shared a brain. And Matt Ryan at his heart, I think, is a system guy. He has the skills to execute a particular system and to try to do what you ask him to do. If what you're asking him to do is so far ahead of the class, then he's going to look like an MVP candidate.
Right.
And if you're asking somebody like Sarkisian, who doesn't have his Shanahan's mind, doesn't have Shanahan's creativity, doesn't have Shanahan's innovative spirit, to try to be Shanahan and run his offense and call these plays like you think he might, then you end up with this, which is a shoddy approximation, which is, it's a complete regression across the board. And I don't think it's going to get better right away. It's fair to say Kyle Shanahan was the Atlanta Falcons' offensive identity. And you're hearing all these guys talk about, well, we don't really know what we are and what we do well. Well, they're running for almost 5 yards a carry, yet the passing offense has regressed unlike anything else going on in this league.
Matt Ryan was the MVP last year. He has 7 touchdown passes in 6 games. That's not MVP.
And he's already got as many picks as he had all of last season, and they're not getting Julio Jones involved, and you're not seeing Taylor Gabriel with big play after big play. They're in trouble, and maybe they figure out some things down the stretch, but I don't think enough is made of what a sort of tour de force play caller slash coordinator may mean.
Okay.
And I don't know what Kyle's going to do in San Francisco.
Well, I think this is a fair question. He's sitting on an 0-6 team. He's already pulled a quarterback and put a rookie in, C.J. Beathard. I'm not saying it reflects terribly on him, but does what is happening in San Francisco undercut at all some of what you have just said, or do you say, no, San Francisco's terrible and you cannot judge him even a little this year?
What I'm saying is if I've got Kyle running my offense, I'm doing everything I possibly can to keep that going as long as I possibly can, or I'm selling out to keep some of his most trusted lieutenants, whether it's that kid McDaniels or it's that kid LaFleur, I'm not letting all three of them out of my building and then hiring Sarkisian off the street and saying, try to learn this guy's amazing offense and call plays for our play. You can't let all of the youngsters. You've got to somehow keep someone who at least is a direct disciple, who has those tentacles that sprouted out from Kyle, to try to be the voice that's in Matt Ryan's ear, to try to be the guy to coax him, to try to get the guy to believe in these plays. They let them all go.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, I don't know what Kyle's going to be as a head coach. No one knows, and that's obviously not the start you want, but I want him running my offense all days long, eight days a week. And I know he grates on people, and Cleveland let him leave for a lateral move, and, you know, whatever. We can dissect him to death. But he and Josh McDaniels and Adam Gase, the Jim Bob Cooter in Detroit, he's showing signs of it. They will work as hard as they possibly can to schematically help your team and exploit certain things. And there's just not that many guys who can do it the way they can. McVay's another one. There's this sort of, rise of these young offensive minds. And I don't think you can discount, no matter what he did in the second half of that Super Bowl game, and I will always disagree with him on a lot of those calls, he makes players better, period.
amazing that the Redskins had both McVay and Shanahan and didn't do anything. There is such a thing, Jason, as a Super Bowl hangover, and you can look at Cam Newton last year, and you can look at Matt Ryan this year, and as long as I've mentioned Cam Newton, that team looks terrible.
Yeah.
Carolina looks terrible. Yeah. What happened to that team?
Not a great offensive line, and then you start getting injuries on top of it. You know, they lose Greg Olsen, who really was the glue to their passing attack. Mm-hmm. McCaffrey is—he's going to catch a lot of balls. He's going to be a security blanket, but you can't run him between the tackles, and he's going to have to continue to sort of bulk up if he's going to be a factor in the ground game with any sort of regularity. There's just not a whole lot of talent there, and when they do produce, they have to run the offense through Cam. Literally as a, you know, 6'5" point guard. And at times that means slashing in the hole and keeping it yourself and being your own sort of best advocate by plowing through the other team. Physically, though, over 16 weeks, you can't do that. Certain weeks, when you have to, you can. I mean, their reality is, in 2 weeks, back-to-back, they played the Lions and the Patriots. Two horrible defenses.
Right.
They scored 7 offensive touchdowns in those 2 games, and people are like, they're back.
Yeah.
Their other 5 games...
terrible.
They have 5 offensive touchdowns combined.
Yeah.
So they've played 7 games. In 3 of them, they've scored 1 touchdown or less. In 2 of them, they've scored no touchdowns and just relied on field goals. I don't know that that gets markedly better. And then you add a Luke Kuechly who's out on the other side, and now the defense slips just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're just not a good team. I mean, you've got Newton and Matt Ryan, who are you know, recent MVP winners. If you add up their touchdowns and interceptions, they have more turnovers than touchdowns, and we're almost halfway through the season. I think we're in a quarterback crisis. I mean, I think we're in an offensive crisis where you had guys retiring, you had guys not quite developing like Winston and Mariota, not really taking the next step. You've had injuries that have wiped out Aaron Rodgers and you know, other good, you know, good to great quarterbacks. And then you couple that with an offensive line situation where the colleges aren't producing pro-style linemen. And then we're seeing those guys who can protect get hurt. And now that's leading to more quarterback injuries. It's a vicious cycle. And the state of offensive football this year, I don't think it's going to get much better. I mean, Tom, week in, week out, you're relying on a 40-year-old and like a 38-year-old with Breeze to be sort of the gold standard.
Well, this is exactly ideal. What I was going to say. Looking at the AFC, suddenly it looks like Pittsburgh and New England with a 37-year-old quarterback and a 58-year-old quarterback. and it looks like they're better than everybody else, even though their flaws are obvious. Their flaws are obvious, you know?
Yeah, and I'm not going to get too – I mean, I know everybody's now re-anointing the Patriots, and that defense looked the part against Atlanta. I would just say Atlanta is sort
they
of soulless and running.
They gave up 300 to right Cade McNown, whatever his name is.
Well, they came into that game giving up 2 passing touchdowns per game and 350 yards per game.
It's terrible.
So I don't know that immediately changes. I mean, we'll see, like, as they move forward. But, yeah, I mean, you really have this situation now where – there's a chasm. You could. I had this argument with a GM yesterday. Well, not even an argument because he agreed. Josh McCown is one of the 6 to 8 best quarterbacks on the planet right now.
That's awful.
That's just the reality. Like, name me 7 guys who week in, week out this season, 2017, have performed better than him. You can't. And that shows you what's going on.
So, okay, so that leads to, and I mean, thankfully, I don't have Wilbon here, so I don't have to get the drooling about this. But this leads to a very interesting thing. And Chicago is a very good defensive team for the first time in a while, again.
Yeah.
Their quarterback, who they traded 1 million people to get with the second overall pick, threw 7 passes. Threw 7 passes. Can you win in the 2017 NFL, where you say the quarterbacks are just no good, can you win consistently with that?
If you played Baltimore 1 week and Carolina the next, you can.
I right.
mean, like, it just it, the level of competition. Look, Baltimore this week, their first 24 plays went for 52 yards. Let's just think about that for a minute. They got a 6'6 quarterback. If you ran quarterback sneaks 24 times, you'd probably get 50 yards.
Yeah.
If Joe Flacco just leans into the pile, I mean, that's not professional-grade football. And then we just talked about Carolina and their misery. So, yeah, you can win without a quarterback two straight weeks if that's who you play and your defense is game. And, you know, you got a huge – you had two defensive touchdowns against Carolina. They had some big special teams plays. They had a 60-yard run against the Ravens. So you can, but they're going to have to let that kid throw the ball a little bit at some point here and see what he can do. They don't have great skill players there, obviously, and they are running the ball very well. So you could play rugby or Aussie rules football for a couple of weeks, but eventually you will require more than four completed forward passes to win, even in, you know, NFL 2017 offense in crisis, you still are going to have to complete more than four passes. But that, to me, is a perfect snapshot of one week where this kid goes on the road and he gets a lot of kudos for winning on the road in Baltimore where it's tough. And all that's true, but, I mean, he made one play in overtime, and that was pretty much it. And then the following week, they get a big lead with their defense and literally forbid him to throw the football.
No, it's,
and they win again.
Jason, it's like playing Army or Navy. It's like they're not going to throw the ball. It's just a triple option, and that's the way it's going to be. And yet they traded up to get him.
Well, and it's early, and let's see. But, I mean, that's sort of it. I mean, when that's what you're doing, because the other guy you gave $19 million to was so bad, you didn't want to see him after a month. You know what I mean? And you've got Osweiler out there who's making $16 million from the Browns not to play for them.
Right.
To sit on Denver's roster as a backup quarterback and not play for them for another $1 million more. That's sort of it in a nutshell. Like, I don't think crisis is too strong of a word. I mean, now you've got Hundley running around out there instead of Aaron Rodgers.
Hundley's got Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson, and when you only get 87 in the year, that's on you as a passer. Right?
Yeah, and I mean, they didn't want him to do too much, and then when they got behind by multiple scores late, they let him do a little more, and he threw an ugly pick down the stretch. But, I mean, that's the drop-off, and that's what a lot of teams are dealing with. And the sad thing is, I don't think the run of quarterback injury. I mean, I see quarterbacks take kill shots now. You can count a defender striding with nobody blocking him. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, kill shot from the back, kill shot from the blind side. And you see that multiple times in games where no one has even impeded him. Like, if I'm Cam Newton, if I'm Joe Flacco, if I'm Andy Dalton, I mean, I'm looking around saying, watching what happened to Cutler and Palmer and saying, you know, and Rodgers and saying, I'm probably next. Like, we're not done because the offensive linemen just keep dropping. And then the quarterbacks are even more vulnerable and people are teeing off on them. And it's, I think you look at ratings, and I know people are protesting this and protesting that. I think a lot of them are just protesting, it's not worth my time, money, and energy to sit through 3.5 hours and watch this. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tennessee and Cleveland conspired to play a football abomination. They played almost five full quarters because they played almost 10 minutes into overtime, and no one scored a touchdown.
All right.
It's bad. Plug your podcast.
Oh, thanks. On that note, yeah, Tony, I don't know what we're going to do this week, hon. We ain't got no guests lined up yet. We're still working on it. Coleman's dropping the ball like he always does. I'm going to get this guy. I'm going to get that guy. He's got nobody. But we'll come out. We'll talk about the Ravens. We'll talk about the NFL. We'll find ourselves a guest on the street somewhere. You can check it out on the iTunes. Be More Opinionated, hon, or bmoshow.com. And we'll see what we come up with, hon. I don't know yet. We'll figure it out.
Thank you so much, Jason. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon. He's great. I mean, he's just great. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Nigel will lead off with news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's ad. Everybody here has the Harry's razors, or if they don't, they will get the Harry's razors. We should get, you know what? Harry should send us a bunch of razors that we can give out as gifts here at Chatter. Oh. I mean, that wouldn't be bad.
For people to come to the show, get a razor.
Yeah, they should get a razor. We should do that. Harry's is so confident you're going to love their blades. They'll give you their trial shave set for free when you sign up at harrys.com/TonyK. Just pay for the shipping. So we'll pay for shipping for about 10 razors and have them send it to us for free. Harry's is all about a great shave at a fair price, which is why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's. Jeff and Andy, still claiming to be two ordinary guys who are fed up with buying overpriced razors, started Harry's to fix shaving. They bought their own German factory with over 100 years of blade-making experience to ensure the highest quality, and all of their products are backed by a 100% quality guarantee. Harry's offers their blades at half the price of the leading five-blade razor selling directly to you over the internet. to claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. And you can do this. It's a $13 value for free when you sign up. All you do is cover the shipping. It includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades with lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover. And to get your free trial set, go to Harry's, HARRYS.com/Tony K right now. That's Harry's.com/Tony K.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Rabbi Misha Ben David on bass and guitar with vocalist Jackie Carton performing Empty Spaces, which was written in 1998 by Misha and singer-songwriter Allison Downey Austin, a theater professor at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo. Allison fighting a very rare form of cancer but remains active on the Michigan music scene. Jackie Canton lives in Washington, D.C., has been advised to take her breakfast at Chatter, even though she's not a little. By the way, Dr. Porthauser, Rabbi Ben David, was ordained by a progressive yeshiva in Manhattan, 2012. And he's available for your scrutiny. His diploma is available for my scrutiny.
That would be a great band name. Diploma. Progressive Yeshiva. That'd be a great band name.
That is a good name. That is a good name, Progressive Yeshiva. Michael, if people like the rabbi want to send us their music, how do they do it?
They can email their music to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com. And Kalamazoo is where my in-laws are from.
Kalamazoo, right. Michigan.
Liz's family's from Kalamazoo. Jan and Moni got married at Kalamazoo Country Club.
As is Derek Jeter from Kalamazoo.
Is that where he's from?
Oh, really? Yes, okay. Derek Jeter, that. Kalamazoo, Michigan.
I think he was from Lansing. No? Okay.
I think Kalamazoo.
Okay.
Speaking of you, you played with Gary yesterday in a golf event. What happened?
I drove Gary around Whiskey Creek yesterday at the the Flying Dog Tournament at Whiskey Creek, just up 270, which is great. Gary and
beautiful
I did this
course.
Last yeah. spring. One of their directors, I think the director of marketing there, sales and marketing, Scott Wisdom, is a listener of the show.
Good.
They put on a great event. There's a few listeners. Jason Guthrie, I think, met you yesterday. He emailed the show. It's a shamble, so it's sort of hard to say how you played, but I will reveal that Gary Braun can putt. He shows up to putt. Not the most reliable iron player, can hit a big drive, but he made a 40-footer for eagle.
Really?
On the signature 18th par 5. This was our eighth hole. I was on in two. Gary had a 40-footer uphill. He just says, don't even bring your putter, kid. Just buries the putt.
Yeah. Wow. That's great.
That is
yeah,
great.
We had a great time.
Who knew?
And where'd you finish?
We were we finished with a 64, and that got us tied for second, which we won the second place sort of card showdown.
Right.
Because we had a birdie on the number one handicap hole.
And what did you get for this?
We had a huge
thousands
prize.
Of dollars.
Is that a steak?
Yeah, just a six pack of Flying Dog. No, they had a great little prize package, and our host Billy Litz, accountant to the stars, won the long drive on the same hole. So our table cleaned up. But I'll bring in the Flying Dog prize pack tomorrow.
You also got one of our listeners brought in a present for Bootsy. What is the present for Bootsy today? Have you seen it?
Oh, very nice.
Oh, it's a beautiful.
Oh, look at that.
It looks like a candy corn.
Yeah. It's a candy corn that is crocheted.
Yeah. Hand crocheted candy corn, which is great because he's now gripping everything.
And that will go straight into his mouth.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Everything's going straight to the mouth.
And it's smiling, so it's a friendly toy.
That's really nice.
We need more smiles in our family.
Is that something that Chessie would like?
Chessie would eat that, shred it in 10 minutes.
No, Jack would do it in 5.
Yeah, exactly. Just totally shredded.
Those incisors going.
Bootsy won't do that. Not yet. News.
Yes, before we start the news proper, I have a correction I would like to make.
Okay.
It was pointed out by the 1.5 million followers on Twitter of this program.
Yep.
Yesterday when you were talking about how did Super Bowl teams that lost in the Super Bowl do the following year?
And I said they often did not make the playoffs.
I read some stats, and in my haste to bring you that information, I did not read the precise stats. It was the breakdown of how the past 23 Super Bowl runners mm-hmm. fared, and I had made the comment that none had reached the Super Bowl, and everyone said, really, what about the Bills? What about these teams?
No, so, the Bills reached it three more times in a row.
Yes, they did.
Four.
Yes,
a lot of teams did. So that was the 23 past Super Bowls I was referring
to. Great.
So we're not going to give you Outstanding Athlete 6th grade 1994 from Colin Matthews.
No.
But I'm going to give somebody hear this.
Yes.
If they promise to hang it.
Yes.
If they promise to hang it in their homes.
This is so great.
We're going to give this away.
Yes. Isn't that great? We will start out with the NBA. The Wizards won last night for the fourth time in history. They're now 3-0.
Say that again, Nigel.
Fourth time in history.
The fourth time in history. 3-0.
Right.
Wow. That's
But I mean, they've been playing for 50 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's good to have that.
So they can get to 9 and 23 pretty easily.
57 years of playing.
Tough to get to 9 and 20 this year.
Right. But at least Martian Gortat is not getting caught up with. He's like, oh, that's awesome, but we don't care about it. It's got nothing to do with achieving our goals.
So. All right. So David and I will get in a fight now.
Oh.
John Wall took 3 for 14. I don't care that his percentage was terrible. Mm-hmm. I care that he took 14 shots.
Why do you care?
Again, because he took 28 shots the first game, then 12, then 14, which I think is right. Now, they will be on national television tomorrow night, and he will play against Lonzo Ball tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. And I bet he takes more than 22 shots tomorrow night.
Maybe.
It is wolf season.
It's wolf season.
Yeah.
We're not getting in a fight. You
no,
always
David
tell me.
David is not being baited with this.
Okay. All right, fine.
If he takes more than 12 shots against a rookie point guard, you're going to be upset about that?
No, I just think because it's national television, I think he wants to be Russell Westbrook on national television.
Okay.
Well, that wasn't the sparks that I had hoped for today.
No, it wasn't.
I'm not giving David Colin Matthews his seventh grade athlete of the year.
You don't get that.
In 1995.
Now, with just over 30 seconds left in the game, it was a 2-point game at this point.
Yeah, what,
Coach Scott Brooks was able to draw the charging foul.
He walks out onto the court.
Full timeout.
Walks out onto the court and appears to get bumped by a 9-foot guy.
Nikola Jokic.
Right.
Good player.
And
totally ran into him on purpose.
On purpose.
And rightfully got teed up for it.
So why do you think he did that?
I have no idea. It was an amazingly stupid decision to make with 30 seconds in a game left that you're down by two in.
Right.
But he did it.
And Brooks went right to the referee.
Right to him, and the ref said, I got it. Bang, you're teed up.
Yeah.
He claimed Jokic.
The Jokic is on him.
Yeah. He claimed it was not intentional.
Yeah, of course.
Well, of course he claimed that. The guy from Phoenix is claiming when he said, I want out of here, he's talking about a hair salon.
How
and nobody believes that.
How absurd is that?
It's not, because it's not true.
So I said, he has to hire better writers. This guy, Eric Blitzer. Yeah, you got to hire better writers.
Yeah, on the other hand, he'll get traded and he'll go someplace.
Well, he's played his last game. Isn't that what the GM said? Yes. He said, yeah, he won't be coming back for us.
He might be in Denver, as a matter of fact. That's a very good possibility.
Mr. Tony, Bill O'Reilly has apparently paid quite a bit of money out on sexual harassment allegations.
Quite a bit!
Including the latest allegation was reporting for $32 million, the largest by far of 6 such agreements. I think the others
six
were
agreements?
Yeah, totaling.
Of the same nature.
Yes.
Totaling probably over $50 to $60 million.
And wasn't his contract extended
after that?
Now, what Fox is saying is that they did not know the monetary settlement, but they knew there was a settlement. They did not know the number.
That is a fine point.
Yes. And then Megyn Kelly, who has struggled to be kind with her new daytime TV show.
But that has nothing to do with what she said.
No. It's just not a very good show, in a lot of people's opinions, mine included.
Right.
She went out and she was like, well, I don't know what Bill O'Reilly's saying, that no women ever complained, because I certainly sent a letter to people I complained about his attitude and behavior towards women. And then he lashed back. He's like, I have no idea what she's talking about. No. I don't understand this.
Bill O'Reilly is quoted as saying, because I heard this morning on the Today Show, I didn't do anything wrong.
No.
And he is also talking about how he feels hamstrung because of these confidentiality agreements, so he can't give his side of the story.
Because innocent guys always give up $32 million.
You know, I mean, really.
I
mean, as we say, honestly, what are we doing here? Honestly, what?
Yes.
Multiple times in these agreements, and we're never going to know. We're not going to know.
Honestly, what are we doing here?
So,
yes,
he was to give him credit for what he did on television as a performer. He was paid $25 million a year by Fox.
Right.
They're not paying him that because he's making $6 million for them. No. He's bringing in more money than that. He was the number one cable news star without any doubt.
Awesome.
You know, without any doubt. And now he's I don't know. I can't imagine he'll be on television again.
I think it would be difficult.
Can't imagine.
I think it would be difficult to put him back.
Can we get to Ray Knight?
Yeah, okay.
What is this?
Someone explain this.
Because everyone's sitting, well, I don't know about everyone, but I know I like Ray Knight.
I like him a lot.
I've talked to him a few times. I really like him on TV.
He's very good.
Would you read this story?
Yes. Yeah, so
first of all, I thought he lived in Georgia.
I thought so.
Well,
too.
During the season, he's up here. He's got a place.
The season's
here.
Done.
It's still the playoffs.
Yeah, it's,
yeah. We're not in them.
The Nats aren't in the playoffs.
I'm wearing my jersey. We're not in them. So we're not in them. Really?
Rain 2017.
Yeah. Fairfax County Police said they were called to Knight's home in the Alexandria area about 4 a.m. Sunday night for reports of a fight. They say Knight got
Knight, by the way, is big.
Yeah, hey, he's like 6'4".
He's
right?
Big, tall guy. Strong. Yeah. Knight, you don't mess around with him.
64 years old.
I don't care.
Got into a fight with a 33-year-old male.
Like it. Nolan Ryan style.
Yeah, reminiscent of Nolan Ryan. Yes, don't mess with that guy.
Keeps a bat by the front door.
Sent the 33-year-old to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. So apparently it's very shady about what happened as to what sparked the fight.
Well, we don't know.
Yeah, Knight would not say, and the police would not say. But basically, Knight said this was two grown men acting like children.
He did say that.
Yes. And apparently they came, I think Knight rents the house from the 33-year-old man, okay. And they came in the middle of the night, and
Knight
woke
was
up.
Asleep.
Yes, and then they got into an argument, yeah. And then the fight broke out.
Well, the argument would be, what are you doing here? Right. It's the middle of the night. Exactly.
Assuming,
exactly.
But I don't know if it was something else that was going on.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know.
So,
but I hope this doesn't hurt him. I think he's really good on TV.
Yeah.
And he says stuff that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the Nats never do what he says.
Right. We like him.
Yeah, we do like Ray Knight.
It's like our position on Jack Evans. We like Jack Evans here. Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with Jack Evans.
This is what he said. Two grown men were acting like immature men. I hate that it transpired. I hope it gets worked out in a fair and equitable way.
Okay. I'm confused. When he says two grown men, is he one of the two? He's talking.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So that's a bit of a mea culpa.
Fair and equitable means please
yes.
Don't
okay.
Sue me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
So it's exactly just bizarre. And a very sad story. I know you'd seen this. I saw this the other day. Two gentlemen who were married, Greg Chittick and Jimmy Walton, were celebrating.
They have a condo in Rehoboth, and they're out on bicycles in Dewey Beach.
They're celebrating their one-year anniversary.
They're on bicycles.
Yeah, just outside the starboard, and an SUV loses control.
Those are the Dewey streets are pretty narrow streets,
right.
And people go a little too fast on the Dewey streets. But in this case, it's different.
Yes, the SUV swerved.
A guy had a medical emergency.
61-year-old motorist, I believe from New York, suffered an acute medical event while driving.
And ran over.
And that gentleman also died. So it was
Yes. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh.
Yes, so it was just...
Oh, then we're never going to know.
Right. So,
well, I mean, if they do a toxicology report or something like that. Well, I guess the assumption is he had a stroke or a heart attack whilst he was driving.
Right.
But it's just, I mean...
It's terrible.
We've all been in that area, and it's just, you know, and the night was nice, and, you know, people are on bikes all the time. It's just tragic. One of those things.
The night was clear, coming. And the moon was yellow, and the leaves came tumbling down. I was standing on the corner when I heard a bulldog shout, this is Staggerly.
I'm just going to
Great Lord Price.
That's great.
Yes, so there you go. I will take you now to...
Florida,
Mr. Tony.
Wait, you're not going to do the Metro headline?
Oh, my gosh. I'm sorry. I forgot about that.
For those of you people visiting Washington, D.C. and thinking of taking the Metro,
sure.
Think again.
We may have to save the Florida woman story for another time. Yes, electrical arcing incidents.
Here is the headline.
Have more than doubled.
Metro reports a sharp rise in arcing incidents.
Yes.
Now, most year after year after year, they've already got 5,000 of these things. And at any given time, the car you're in or the tunnel you're in could explode into flames. Explode into flames.
It's a thrill ride.
Yeah.
It's a thrill ride.
So now there's a sharp rise in these things.
Well, between July and September, there were 19 arcing events during the same period.
Wait, July and September?
That's only 2 months.
July, August,
September.
Right, so the summer.
And that could technically be between July 31st and September
That's
1st.
Could be.
It could technically be.
During the same period in 2016, there were only 9 incidents.
We're more than double.
More than double, yes. So it's not. Now, what they think is going on is...
They're grilling down there.
I thought they were shutting
hot dogs.
Well, there was a lot of that. They did. They did try and fix this, but obviously
they tried. They didn't. You know, it didn't work.
Sorry, we threw some stuff at it. It didn't work. What they think is, and they've had trouble apparently in these areas ever since it was installed, is that when it rains a lot, the water leaks down and drips on these things and causes it to blow up. Essentially,
now that's a fire.
Yeah, and of course, who's the guy? Is it Wiedemeyer? Is that the dude?
Can I ask Wiedemeyer, a question?
I'm sorry. Yes.
This has been going on since they built the thing. That's 40 years.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd fix it by now.
Well, you know, they get around to it. They've got a list of things. Got to clean the attic out, you know. So they have a theory about how to sort of drip this sealant down through the concrete that will work.
I wouldn't do any dripping. Because you're saying that the dripping causes the sparking and the arcing.
Well, yes, but they think
umbrellas.
Yeah, they.
That's right. They hand you an umbrella.
Yeah, there you go.
Walk in a metro.
So it's not good times for Metro.
No. All right. That's very good. All right. We're out of here.
Yes.
We can get a Florida man later in the week.
Florida woman.
Okay. That source never stops. That's like
true.
A fountain.
Can I just say?
That's like a fountain.
It involves a teddy bear and a house fire. That's
there you
all
go.
I'll say.
Fantastic.
Oh, my God.
All right, we will return with Old Guy Radio, and Barry Svrluga will join us. We will ask about the World Series, and we will certainly ask about Dusty Baker and what the prospects are for a new manager with the Nats when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
A long, long time ago. Old Guy Radio for the day. This is my close personal friend, Don McLean. Not Don McLean, the basketball player. Not the Wizards, Don McLean, no. Don McLean hated my guts.
Seems like he hated a lot of people.
Well, he hated me. I did a story on him, and he hated me. And he
was this a Rolling Stone?
Yeah. Did it for Rolling Stone. He hated. This is a great song.
Oh, I have to go find that story.
It's a complete classic tune. His producer was somebody named Joel Dorn, and Joel Dorn and I got along, but Don McLean and I've had trouble with Barry Manilow and Don McLean.
You had trouble? Really? Manilow? Yeah.
Barry Manilow had him escorted outside
state
lines.
State of Maryland.
Get out.
I mean, driven to the border.
Don't come back.
There's so many great things that should be in the first paragraph of your obit. I don't know where
driven
I
to
would
the border.
Start.
By the way, what?
I was just going to give some critical commentary on this. This album was released, American Pie, was released on this day in 1979.
It's a thumbprint. The album is a thumbprint.
Yes.
That
and
was
he finally.
79?
Yeah, it's a very cool picture.
Yes. Yes.
But he talked about, you know, over the years, he did not want to talk about what
the lyrics.
No, it's
much earlier than 79.
Yeah, I thought it was like 73.
71.
71.
Oh,
you said
I 79. Thought you said 79.
No, 71.
Yeah,
71.
I was like, really?
Yes.
But he was always very coy about what the lyrics meant. Finally, he revealed, he's like, yeah, Elvis Presley was the king and Bob Dylan was the king.
Knew what it was.
Yeah, they knew, but then
Dylan
was
analyzed.
Asked.
People wrote papers about this.
Dylan was asked just this year about how he was referenced in the song. He said, a jester? Sure. The jester writes song like Masters of War, A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, It's All Right, Ma. Some jester. I have to think he's talking about somebody else. Ask him.
Well, it's Dylan.
Well, it's Dylan.
Insulted.
Exactly.
Don McLean throwing shade at Bob Dylan.
Nobel
Who's
Prize
win that?
Winner.
Who's going to win that? By the way, I wanted to mention this. I neglected to say Ryan before. Both Jonathan and Ryan were working the bar. And that is, as I learned last night, that there's more to that than I thought. I mean, that's a skill and an art. I also, when I was doing the bar, I didn't even ask people for payment. I mean, I just handed them things.
Yeah, here you go. Take it.
And Alan saw that and said, what are you doing? I go, I don't know how to do this. I'm just here for grins. Barry Svrluga joins us now to talk about the World Series and to talk, obviously, about Dusty Baker. I'm assuming that you agree that the Dodgers should be favored in this, but maybe you don't.
No, I do. And I think, and Dave Shannon wrote about this in the Post this morning, I think if you go through and kind of match up, you come away with a lot of things that are really even. The Astros' offense was probably the best in baseball, led by the smallest guy in baseball, Jose Altuve, who is just a joy to watch.
He's terrific.
Yeah, it's just super fun. And the Dodgers obviously start with Kershaw, but, you know, he can be matched up by Dallas Keuchel and Justin Verlander. So the edge to the Dodgers is really their bullpen, and more specifically, Kenley Jansen, their closer, who's just a total beast and basically unhittable. If the Dodgers go to the eighth with a lead, the game is pretty much over. If Houston goes to the eighth with a lead, the game is very much in play. So I think that's the one thing that tilts it in LA's favor.
I would have said better bullpen, better bench. I mean, the Dodgers,
the Dodgers
get hitting. All of a sudden, there's somebody in the game, and you go, who is that guy? And he's on second base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they have done – I mean, the way they built their 104-win season is not really around, you know, two or three big stars, although you can argue that Justin Turner is a star at this point, and Corey Seager, their shortstop, if he's back.
Is he going to play?
Well, we don't know. So,
okay.
But I think – I think what you're saying is right, that they've kind of built this thing using not just the 25-man roster, but really over the course of the year, a 40-man roster, and they have a bunch of interchangeable parts. They don't necessarily roll out the same eight position players every day.
No, not at all.
And that gives them flexibility late in games, particularly in the National League Park, where you know the American League Astros have kind of their set way of going about things. The National League Dodgers have a little bit more flexibility in these first two games in L.A.
What I found interesting is it's so every single year around the trade deadline, two or three names pop up, and we got to have this guy, and we got to have that guy to take us to the World Series. Well, the main two guys actually did that, Darvish and Verlander. Mm. They actually did it. Both those teams are in the series, and I'm not sure. I am certain that Houston would not have been there without Verlander, right? Certain of that.
Yes, that's right. And you know, Justin Verlander is such an interesting creature because he, for so many years in Detroit, he threw not his 200 innings, but his 230 innings, his 240 innings, and they got into the postseason. And at some point, that took its toll. And you thought, well, is he done? If somebody trades for him at the deadline the last couple of years, is that going to be a boost, or is he just worn out? And he has been incredible since they traded for him at the end of August, actually.
Yes.
And you know, stuff that people don't do anymore in the postseason, complete game, nine-inning efforts that he throws 123 pitches, take the bullpen right out of the equation. Darvish hasn't been as consistently good. He pitched well in the National League Championship Series. He's obviously a star caliber player. He won't start game two. They're going to start Rich Hill in game two, the lefty, veteran lefty. So you won't get the matchup of the two trade deadline guys. But those two guys will be pretty instrumental in determining the outcome of the series.
I will say this, and I'm probably wrong, and you've probably seen 50 guys who do this better. Yu Darvish's curveball breaks 5 feet. Mm-hmm. It's the most break on a curve I have ever seen delivered with real velocity. I don't know how, when that is on, I don't know how he's hittable at all. I don't.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, it's a great pitch. I'd encourage you to watch Kershaw's curveball tonight, too.
Okay, yeah.
I think there's a lot of good pitchers in this series, and there's a lot of good pitches in this series, and Darvish's curveball would certainly be one of them. But, there's been a lot of discussion, particularly in L.A., about Clayton Kershaw coming up big or small in important games.
Yeah.
I think he's taken some steps to putting that to rest. The Game 5 outing to beat the Cubs was borderline dominant. He is just, to me, such a great competitor to watch, and I think it'll be really interesting to see how he handles his first time on this stage, the first Dodger World Series since 1988.
I have to say that of all the statistics, I mean, I'm old, of all the statistics that floored me, and maybe David and Liz, maybe you felt the same way, that the Dodgers had not been in the World Series in close to 30 years. I just was stunned by that. Stunned.
Yeah, you know Steve Garvey doesn't play for them anymore, right?
I do. Neither does Ron Say.
Right,
okay. I know.
Yeah,
I know.
Right, exactly. Pengy. Yeah, no, I mean that, and I think that the Dodgers are surprised by that, not because, the Royals hadn't been for 29 years when they got there in 2014. I mean, that kind of thing comes up. The Astros have only been once in.
Yeah, but these are the Dodgers.
I know, what became clear to me covering the NLCS, and I've covered these Dodgers in the playoffs over the last several years. I mean, part of the reason you're stunned is because you're used to watching Octobers with L.A. in
yes.
the playoffs. They've won
yes.
5 straight division titles, and they spend annually the most. They outspend yeah. the Yankees. They are the Yankees now. They are the West Coast Yankees, a $265 million payroll. But what was striking to me in covering these guys is that they are sick of hearing about 1988, and it just gets tired. Not that they resent Oral Hershiser or Kirk Gibson or the moments that they had, because those are not just history of Dodger baseball, but history of baseball moments. But it just gets tiresome when it's like, well, you know, you're not like the 88 crew. And it's a little bit different than even, say, the Red Sox thing when they hadn't won in 86 years, because the people around Los Angeles, the people going to these games and paying for this product, the people in their 30s and 40s and 50s, that's their team, the 88 team. Those are their heroes. So they can call up those moments and what it felt like when Gibson hit the home run off Eckersley in the first game in 88, how that team was an underdog and beat the heavily favored A's. Those are all like very personal memories for the core of the Dodger fan base. So to finally live up to that and break through that barrier and get to the World Series was a meaningful step for these guys, I think.
Let me just pivot here and get to Dusty Baker. And I think that 4 or 5 days out, my first question is, why would you let him go if you didn't have someone that you knew you were going to bring in? And now it looks like they don't have someone. I mean, I'm okay with making a change. I'm okay with that. But I think the uncertainty of who's coming in gives me great pause.
It should. I mean, I don't think you can evaluate. I mean, I wrote this the day after. I don't think you can evaluate this move until you know, you know, manager X is out. Who is manager Y? It is a trade. You have decided that this isn't an obvious thing like Matt Williams. Matt Williams had to go. The wins over replacement manager was going to be higher with whoever you brought in than Williams. This was not that situation. This guy won 95 and 97 games. He took the team to the fifth game of the division series both times, and either of those games could have gone either way. And if either of them had gone either way, you can't tell me that Dusty Baker's not the manager. Mike Rizzo, the general manager, the day that they let Dusty go, I think made some comments that are going to hang with him for a while, and they are winning lots of regular season games and division titles is not good enough anymore. We want to win a World Series. Well, okay, so the next guy that you hire, what are the qualities and how do you know? What qualities does he have, and how do you know he can get you to that next spot? I mean, it kind of, you know, if they just throw a complete curveball and they're like, Jim Leland is our manager for 2018, or Tony La Russa is our manager for 2018, they haven't solved a long-term problem, but you could say, oh, I get it. Like, this guy's a master tactician. He's won a World Series. He's at the tail end of his career. We're bringing it all back for 2018 because we know Bryce Harper is here and we know Daniel Murphy is here. Kind of go, wow, that's amazing.
I'm okay with that. One of the questions I wrote down was, is this a one-year job? Because I'm okay if they had done that, but it looks like they haven't settled. They don't know.
No. That's exactly right. And I think that shows – and it's fine. Like, Dave Martinez, the Cubs bench coach, is a widely respected baseball guy who has served at Joe Maddon's side for a long time, has been overlooked as a manager candidate. If they hired him, people in baseball would be like, oh, good. You know, Dave Martinez deserved a shot. He's got a good team next year. This is great for him. But when you cast it against what the parameters of the job have already been outlined as, how do you know that Dave Martinez can be Dusty Baker and be better than Dusty Baker and get you through not just the next step to the NLCS, but beyond that to win a World Series? The answer is you don't know.
You don't know.
And the other thing that this shows, the fact that, they're kind of assembling the normal group of managerial candidates that any of the five teams that had openings this year would kind of be choosing from, is I think that there was major, I don't think, I know that there was discord and differences of opinion between the baseball operation at Nationals Park and ownership. And the reason that this dragged on was because they were not of the same mind, and that it's my belief that Mike Rizzo would have kept Dusty Baker, wanted to keep Dusty Baker, and one or two of the owners who are intimately involved in this decision disagreed with their top baseball guy, and that left their top baseball guy taking bullets for ownership, trying to explain ownership's decision as if it was his own. And that's a repeated pattern here, and you know, Mike Rizzo is going into his last year too. That's something to watch as 2019 unfolds.
I like Mike Rizzo. Yeah. I text with Mike Rizzo.
That's
like
the problem I have with this ownership group.
All right, so when do you think we'll know?
I don't
I mean,
think
do you think they're actually sending out feelers to Leland or La Russa?
I don't. I mean, I have no information about that. I'm just saying that that's the move where you go, whoa, okay, they have something in mind that, like, people didn't think was possible. But I don't – I mean, would I bet on that happening? No. I think it's going to be one of the traditional candidates who maybe hasn't had a chance yet. And you know, this is an extraordinary, extraordinary opportunity if it goes to – well, whoever it goes to, but if it goes to a first-time manager. Normally, like, you know, if teams that fire their managers or don't bring their managers back are – the Phillies or the Tigers, or, you know, these teams that are kind of building still. This team, whoever, if Tony, if you managed it, it would have a chance to win the World Series. I'm not saying they're going to win the World Series,
right?
And I'm not saying that you should apply, but...
I'd have put Kendrick in more often.
Yes, so there you go. Right, exactly. Yeah. So it's going to be, it's set up to win.
Yeah. One last question. I read that it's like the Chinese wall posters. When Boz attacks Bryce Harper, it gives me the feeling that they're not going to try to sign Bryce Harper and bring him back. Do you have any reason to believe that?
Well, I mean, what's the definition of try? I mean, I think that they will make an offer. I think that they will, you know, engage Scott Boras on what it would take to bring Bryce Harper back. I think Scott Boras's idea of what it will take to sign Bryce Harper is going to be a lot different than what the Lerners and Mike Rizzo will think if Mike Rizzo's in that job at that point. It's my strong belief it's going to be a $500 million contract. I don't think that the Lerners will pay that, and we can debate the merits of that. I mean, if you're going to pay one guy, say, $45 million a year, you have to be willing to exceed the luxury tax threshold and build a team around, do what the Dodgers do essentially, mm-hmm. and not care about being taxed, because you can't build a roster on $165 million payroll if a quarter of that is the one player.
No, you have to do, it's you're saying he's LeBron, like they said in Cleveland.
That's exactly what
and
you
we've
mean.
Got to have him, and I don't care what it costs us, we got to have him, which, by the
that's
way,
right.
in Cleveland is 100% smart.
Mm-hmm.
And because he rewarded them with championship and three straight finals.
Mm-hmm.
So you do it.
That's
all right.
Correct.
Thanks, Barry.
Appreciate it, Tony.
Talk to you soon. Barry's Verluga, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back. This is a long show today. Mm-hmm. We'll come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
It's time for Tony's Mailbag.
Here comes Tony's Mailbag.
Now here comes Tony's Mailbag.
Send him your emails and notes.
And don't send him faxes. It's time for Tony's Mailbag.
Here
comes this is pretty cool.
This is Jason Hughes.
Mailbag.
Here comes Tony's
Mailbag. He'll read some for all of you folks.
Pretty good.
That was good.
Jason is always good.
Yeah, he's a pro.
He's a pro.
Before we get into the mailbag, I'd like to say thanks to Jason Lockenfour of CBS Sports, Washington Post columnist Barry Sverluga, for you try saying that four times fast, for coming on the show today. I'd like to thank our sponsors today, SeatGeek and Harry's Razors. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Tony Kornheiser's Show, wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. If you do listen through iTunes, please leave a review. From Kevin Brown in Seven Valleys, Pennsylvania, it took me 2.5 hours to drive the 75 miles to get here, but the omelet was fabulous, and the show was even better. I've been texting pictures to the other little in my life who is stuck working in Utah. I keep trying to get him to move back here. If you wouldn't mind giving him an Eat It Cherepovich, that would be icing on the cake. We love the show. Thanks.
Kevin Brown,
from Neil in Rockville, as fun as last night was at Chatter, the highlight had to be when Wilbon walked in and the bar erupted. This is true.
Of course.
It reminded me of one of the early scenes in Goodfellas when Tommy Conway walked into a bar and everyone wanted to be around him. The mayor was definitely in the house. From Mark Shepard in Rockville, Maryland, Matt Collins, who scored a touchdown last night on that long play, right?
Yes.
He was the one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The rookie.
Grew up a few blocks from my house in Rockville, Maryland.
Oh,
Hollins played football
right?
for Wooten High School, perennially one of the worst teams in Montgomery County, Maryland. Hollins saw little of the field in high school, reportedly because the Wooten coaches didn't like his attitude. Hollins did a post-grad year at a prep school. He walked on to the University of North Carolina football team, eventually earned a scholarship. It is stunning that a player with this background caught a long bomb pass for the Eagles' first touchdown against his hometown team, not to mention that the Redskins' receivers were terrible. That's his editorial comment.
Okay, then.
From Charlie Burtz in Springfield, Virginia. I'm pretty sure that Bootsy is sizing up Dr. Grandpa, taking note of how much he isn't willing to pick him up. Someday before long, the old orange guy will lean in and say, "Hey, buddy, what can Gramps get you? A bottle, a diaper, a jingle?" To which the sly babe will lean in and whisper, "The answer to all of your questions is money." Elliot Olshansky, Comac, New York, Suffolk County, Long Island. On Thursday's show, during your discussion of the J. Crew and the J. Crew catalog, I was stunned that Chris Saliza failed to mention what had to have been his favorite J. Crew catalog, the 1998 edition that featured the stars of Dawson's Creek. I would say this merits a failing Saliza hashtag, sad, but that honor should be reserved for his fantasy Premier League team, which dropped to 30th place this weekend out of 31 teams in the Littles League. Best regards from Suffolk County, and as the proud holder of an MBA from Fordham, might I add, eat it, tree frog. It's probably addressed to me. Pat Keene in Yonkers, New York. Being a longtime listener and little, having followed the show all over the dial, website, satellite pod, one of the things I love most is the random minutia that becomes an inside joke or is hysterically funny to littles and is practically meaningless to anyone else. Affirmation, baby, corner curl cabinet, and many random show things can pop into my head for whatever reason and make me laugh out loud, and it's impossible to explain to people not in the know. Yesterday, I was walking my dog about 7 a.m. in the morning, and a landscape company had the leaf blower going full blast. A neighbor, whom I've never spoken to but was clearly annoyed, was standing on his porch. As I walked by, I said, "I can't believe the chaputzvah of those guys," and laughed to myself. Without missing a beat, and to my utter amazement, he said, "La cheeserie."
No!
That was cool.
Right.
Theron or Theron Cleveland in Atlanta. One more raccoon story, if you'll allow it. When I was in high school, we never get enough raccoon stories. I was walking out of my car in the school parking lot after a varsity basketball game. The team my school had defeated was from a rival school a little further out in the county. As I neared my vehicle, I see there's quite a commotion going on a few rows over and a crowd gathering around another car. I go to investigate, and from what I can gather, there's a wild animal inside one of my classmates' cars.
Hello.
Quote, "Those rednecks from Thompson High put a raccoon in my car," the classmate exclaimed. For several minutes, other students crowded to peer through side windows. Some gather enough courage to open a door, take a peek inside for a second or two. Finally, the school resource officer makes his way to the crowd with pistol drawn. Inspected the car for vermin, but in the end found nothing. Next week at school, I see the classmate in the hall. I ask if anything ever came of the raccoon. He tells me that from all the excitement, the raccoon crawled up and hid behind the glove box on the passenger side.
There you go.
And in so doing, got itself caught in the radiator.
Oh,
it was not discovered until the following weekend when he noticed something beginning to smell.
Hello.
Ryan in Connecticut, and he says, not the rich part. So does your sales pitch for studio rentals at Chatter go something like this? It may not be soundproof, and the glare from Mazza Gallery is blinding, but the sausage is great. Bob George in Burlington, Vermont. 2 weeks ago, I was in D.C. with some coworkers visiting a client. While riding in the Uber, I randomly asked why we weren't taking the Purple Line. Two or three of my coworkers, all from Vermont, didn't respond at all, but one of them stopped for a moment and asked, "Are you a little?" I turned around. He showed me the TK salute while dropping a La Cheeserie. We've known each other for over 10 years, had never made the connection before. After our meeting, we stopped at Chatter. We met Nigel. We were both thrilled by the shout-out on the podcast the following day. Today, I'm in Vegas for work again. I just parlayed the skins to cover at 5.5 and the under at 48.5.
So well.
It's amazing how the TK experience has seeped into both my personal and professional life.
Mm-hmm.
You lost on both of those. Sadly, the under and the Redskins. Sort if you're out on your bike tent, everyone, as always, do wear white.
How great is that?
Thank you, everybody. Mm-hmm. Hope you enjoyed it.
Just ever. take me to the bar? Would you walk me next to you and keep me safe from all the cars and all the other dogs out there that want to cause me so much harm?
The only trace is a hole.